Have you ever found yourself lost, not just on a road, but in life itself? That's exactly where I was when I stumbled upon the Y Cafe, a place that would forever change my perspective. This small, unassuming diner in the middle of nowhere became the setting for the most profound conversation of my life. John P. Strzelecki's The Y Cafe has become a global phenomenon, translated into over 30 languages and read on all 7 continents. What makes this slim volume so powerful is its deceptive simplicity. 3 questions that can transform a life. Oprah Winfrey once highlighted it as a book that asks the questions we're all trying to answer, while countless readers report having multiple copies because they keep giving their own away to friends in need of direction. The book's cultural impact stems from its universal appeal. We're all, at some point, searching for meaning in our increasingly hectic lives. Sometimes the most significant moments in life come when we least expect them, often when we're completely lost. That's what happened to me on a dark stretch of road during what should have been a routine drive home from visiting family in Tennessee. I had taken a week off from my soul-crushing job, the kind where you spend 10, 12 hours daily in a cubicle staring at spreadsheets under fluorescent lights, wondering if you're merely trading your life for a paycheck that barely covers the bills. My situation at that moment perfectly symbolized my life, lost on the road and lost in purpose, unsure of where I was going or why I was even making the journey. It started with a massive traffic jam on Interstate 75. After 20 minutes without movement, people began abandoning their vehicles to complain and stretch their legs. A harried minivan owner in a business suit worried about missing his dinner reservation at some upscale restaurant. A woman in a red convertible BMW ranting on her cell phone about missed meetings. And a carload of youth league baseball players in dusty uniforms driving their chaperone to insanity with an endless chorus of, "Are we there yet?" We were one long ribbon of discontent stretching into the horizon, united in our collective frustration, until a state police officer walked car to car to inform us that a tanker carrying potentially toxic materials had overturned 3 miles ahead. Our options? Turn around or wait another hour minimum for hazmat crews to finish their work. Having reached my frustration limit and feeling particularly rebellious, I crossed the grass median and headed in the opposite direction, ignoring the disapproving looks from other drivers. Without a proper map, just printed MapQuest directions that were now useless scraps of paper, I found myself driving south on back roads when I needed to go north. 5 miles without an exit became 10, then 20, then 25. The landscape changed from suburban sprawl to rolling farmland, each mile taking me further from familiar territory. When I finally found an exit, there was nothing there. No welcoming gas station lights, no fast food restaurant signs, just more narrow country roads stretching into darkness. An hour later, I was officially lost in rural Kentucky. The intersections I passed had ominous signs starting with OLD, as in Old Route 65 and Old Mill Road, names that suggested these roads hadn't seen meaningful traffic since before GPS was invented. With the sun setting behind threatening storm clouds and less than half a tank of gas remaining, I couldn't retrace my steps to where I'd started. My cell phone showed no service bars, and the radio could only pick up static and fragments of fire and brimstone sermons. My only choice was to continue forward and hope to find somewhere to refuel, eat, and regain my bearings. Little did I know that getting hopelessly lost on these forgotten backroads would lead me to the most important discovery of my life, one that would completely reshape my understanding of purpose and direction. Just as my fuel gauge needle slipped below the red line, I saw a light in the distance. I had taken a random left turn at an intersection a few miles back, an act of desperation that was about to pay off in ways I couldn't imagine. As I approached, I could see it was a single white streetlight illuminating a small rectangular building with the Y Cafe spelled out in light blue neon on the roof. Even more surprising were the 3 other cars in the dirt and gravel parking lot. Who else had found this place in the middle of nowhere? I parked, stretched my stiff body, and walked toward the entrance. The sky was black except for a large crescent moon and thousands of stars, the kind of sky you only see far from city lights. As I opened the door, small bells announced my arrival, and a wave of appetizing smells washed over me. Inside, the cafe had the feel of an old-fashioned diner with chrome-colored soda fountain stools and red cushion booths. Every table had sugar, milk, salt, and pepper, comfortable, like somewhere you could talk with friends for hours. A waitress named Casey greeted me with, "Open seating, park it where you want it," and I chose a booth near the door. Everything looked surprisingly new, as if the owner anticipated urban growth in this remote location. When Casey approached and asked why I was here, I explained my predicament. She handed me a menu, saying she could help with the starvation problem. As she gave it to me, I could have sworn the letters on the front dissolved and reappeared. I must be really tired, I thought, as I set it down. I watched Casey interact with a couple in another booth, all three smiling and laughing. My spirits lifted when Casey brought them strawberry rhubarb pie, my favorite. With my immediate concerns about fuel and food easing, I decided on the breakfast platter. While waiting for Casey to return, I examined the menu's back cover, which contained three unusual questions under Items to Ponder While You Wait. Why are you here? Do you fear death? Are you fulfilled? When Casey returned, I asked about the unusual questions on the menu. She explained that people often feel different after spending time at the cafe, so they try to ease customers into the whole "why are you here" experience. Though confused by her explanation, I placed my order and Casey smiled, saying, "Sometimes it helps to look at things from a different perspective." As Casey approached the kitchen, I noticed a man with a wooden serving spoon, clearly the cook. When she reached the window, she spoke to him, and he smiled and waved at me. After they talked briefly, Casey returned to my table, introducing him as Mike, the owner. She then pointed to the question on the menu I'd been reading, "Why are you here?" explaining that changing just a few letters transforms it from something you ask someone else to something you ask yourself, which could change me as a person. When I expressed confusion, Casey showed me by having me read the question differently. Suddenly, it briefly changed to, "Why am I here?" before reverting back. She explained that once someone truly asks themselves this question, seeking the answer becomes part of their being, a gateway that, once opened, is very hard to close. I felt ridiculous, sitting in a cafe in the middle of nowhere discussing philosophical gateways. Casey continued explaining that once you ask yourself, "Why am I here?" the question haunts you constantly until you find the answer. And once you know why you exist, an equally powerful force emerges, the desire to fulfill that reason. "It's like knowing where the X is on a treasure map," she said. "Once you've seen it, it's harder to ignore." I wondered if I might be better off never asking the question at all. Casey assured me this was my choice alone, then left to check on my breakfast order as my mind continued spinning with these unexpected philosophical questions. Looking at the menu's "Why are you here?" question now carried profound weight. I remembered Casey saying it was asking why someone exists at all. Something pulled me toward asking myself the question I'd briefly seen, "Why am I here?" Mike arrived with my enormous breakfast platter, complete with omelet, toast, ham, bacon, fruit, hash browns, biscuits, pancakes, and all the accompaniments. "I'm not sure anyone is this hungry," I said. "You'd be surprised," Mike replied. "Sometimes you just don't know how ready you are for something filling." As I tackled my meal, Casey returned to continue our conversation. I asked what someone does with the knowledge once they discover why they exist. Casey explained that once someone figures out their purpose for existing, or PFE, as she and Mike call it, they should simply do whatever they want that fulfills that purpose. If helping people is your purpose, you might become a doctor, build shelters, or become an accountant, whatever fits your definition of helping. This concept excited me. I'd spent most of my life making decisions based on family advice, cultural pressures, and others' opinions. Casey explained that their most fulfilled customers know their PFE and try all activities they believe will fulfill it, while their least fulfilled customers do many things unrelated to their purpose. When I asked how to discover what might fulfill my purpose, Casey guided me to realize that exploration and exposure to related experiences would naturally reveal the path. She asked if doing what most people do helps me fulfill my purpose for existing. Before I could answer, she asked if I'd ever seen a green sea turtle. When I said I'd only seen pictures, she explained that, strangely enough, she'd learned one of her most important life lessons about choosing daily activities from a big green sea turtle. While snorkeling in Hawaii, she observed how the turtle linked its movements to the water, floating when waves pushed against it, and paddling faster when waves pulled outward. Unlike Casey, who paddled constantly and grew tired, the turtle optimized its movements with the water flow. This taught her that in life, incoming waves are people and activities trying to capture our attention but not aligned with our PFE, while outgoing waves help fulfill our PFE. The more energy wasted on incoming waves, the less remains for what truly matters. While finishing my delicious breakfast of fresh blueberry pancakes and locally roasted coffee, I found myself deep in thought about my unusual conversations with Mike and Casey about life's purpose. Mike approached my table with his characteristic warm smile and asked how the food was. When I suggested he should franchise the cafe to make a fortune, thinking I was offering helpful business advice, Mike's eyes twinkled as he shared a profound story about a businessman who met a fisherman during a tropical vacation. The businessman, dressed in his expensive suit, observed the fisherman's simple but satisfying daily routine of catching a few fish, spending time with family, and enjoying life. Excited by the fisherman's talent, the businessman outlined an elaborate plan. Catch more fish, buy bigger boats, build a processing plant, expand internationally, make millions, and then finally retire to fish, relax, and enjoy life. The fisherman simply smiled and asked, "But isn't that exactly what I'm doing now?" Mike explained that he'd once been like me, constantly pushing towards some future retirement when he could finally do what he wanted. His corporate job had him working 60-hour weeks, missing his children's activities, always saying someday. Then he had an epiphany during a stress-induced health scare. Every single day is an opportunity to do what you want. When he asked if I was doing what I wanted with my life, I felt a knot in my stomach as I admitted I wasn't, having settled into a career path focused on making money rather than finding genuine fulfillment. Mike then introduced me to Anne, a former high-level advertising executive with an MBA in marketing from an elite business school. Her perfectly pressed clothes and elegant demeanor hinted at her previous life. She explained, with insider knowledge, how advertisers deliberately target people's deepest fears and desires for fulfillment, creating carefully crafted messages that suggest their products will fill emotional voids. This creates a destructive cycle she called the consumption trap. We buy things seeking fulfillment, need demanding jobs to pay for them, feel unfulfilled at work, buy more things to compensate for our unhappiness, accumulate more bills requiring even more work time, and become increasingly trapped in a cycle of working and spending. Anne shared her personal experience of being caught in this cycle with raw honesty. She described working 14-hour days, treating herself to expensive handbags and luxury vacations she rarely had time to enjoy, and feeling increasingly empty as she watched life passing by through her corner office window. She was working at a job she didn't care about to buy things she didn't really want, all while convincing others to do the same. One night, after reviewing her $12,000 credit card bill, she went for a walk and ended up in a small coffee shop where a chance conversation with an acquaintance helped her realize she was reading too many of her own advertisements. This moment of clarity led her to deeply reflect on what truly brought her fulfillment, which eventually guided her path to the Y Cafe, where she found a simpler but more meaningful life. After Anne left our table, I reflected on our deep conversation about the fear of death. Mike and Anne had articulated something profound. Most people don't actively fear death as a daily preoccupation, but rather harbor a deeper, more subtle anxiety because they recognize each passing day brings them closer to not having a chance to do what they truly want in life. The profound insight was that you can't fear not having the chance to do something if you have already done it or are doing it every day. This simple yet powerful observation illuminated how our relationship with mortality is intimately connected to our sense of fulfillment. This perspective shift fundamentally altered my understanding of human motivation. It wasn't just about identifying a purpose for existing, but actually living it out daily. Looking at the menu again, why are you here? Do you fear death? Are you fulfilled? The questions now carried the weight of existential importance rather than mere philosophical curiosity. They weren't just conversation starters, but genuine inquiries into the core of human experience. Casey addressed my practical concerns about pursuing my purpose for existing with particular attention to financial worries. She cleverly turned my anxiety on its head with a sarcastic but insightful thought experiment. Imagine the worst possible scenario where I spend my entire life doing what truly fulfills me but reach retirement age without the conventional nest egg, meaning I'd just have to keep on doing the things you want to do. This reframing led to another crucial insight. When we're genuinely fulfilling our PFE daily, we often need less money because we're not constantly buying things to escape or unwind from an unfulfilling life. The expensive vacations, retail therapy, and costly distractions become less necessary when your daily life itself is meaningful. Casey then prompted me to examine people in my life who are genuinely passionate about what they do. The patterns became clear. These individuals radiate authentic happiness, maintain unwavering confidence, and seem to attract what others might call lucky breaks, experiencing serendipitous opportunities and connections at precisely the right moments. Casey explained that this phenomenon is consistently observed among people who know their PFE and actively fulfill it, though the explanations vary. Some attribute it to mystical forces, others see it as the natural alignment of universal energy, and still others view it as divine intervention. What's undeniable is the correlation between living one's purpose and experiencing this flow of positive circumstances. The conversation highlighted how our fear of death is less about the end of life itself and more about the regret of an unfulfilled existence. When we're actively engaged in our purpose, that existential anxiety naturally diminishes, replaced by a sense of peace and completion that comes from living authentically. Mike brought me an enormous piece of strawberry rhubarb pie, its flaky crust and vibrant filling, a welcome sight in the pre-dawn hours. When I asked about my earlier conversation with Casey, he delved into the complex reasons why many people never fully pursue their purpose for existing. Some individuals have simply never been exposed to the concept, living their lives without awareness that such a deeper calling exists. Others intellectually understand the idea, but don't believe they personally possess one, assuming such meaningful purposes are reserved for special people. Perhaps most tragically, many people believe they don't have the right to fulfill their purpose, having internalized messages that their dreams are somehow undeserving of pursuit. Mike explained how society often convinces people that fulfillment requires external validation, whether through wealth, status, or others' approval. Mike shared a powerful story about a visitor's recurring golf dream that perfectly illustrated this concept. The man would have nightmares about impossible golf shots, balls trapped behind trees, buried in deep sand, or perched on steep slopes. Night after night, he'd struggle with these shots until one dream when he had a profound realization. He could simply pick up the ball and place it anywhere he wanted. This insight transformed not just his dreams, but his entire perspective on life. The metaphor was clear. We each control our own destiny and can move the golf ball whenever we feel trapped or constrained by circumstances, whether in careers, relationships, or life paths. Noticing it was already 5:15 in the morning, I savored another bite of pie while joking with Mike about his secret recipe. Then I posed the crucial question to both Mike and Casey. How does someone actually discover their answer to, "Why am I here?" Casey's initial response was playful. She described an elaborate fictional ritual involving mysterious packages arriving on the seventh day of a full moon, sending Mike into fits of laughter. But her underlying message was serious and important. Too many people want someone else to be responsible for bringing them their purpose, waiting for external validation or permission. Casey and Mike then outlined various practical approaches to finding one's purpose, emphasizing that it requires dedicated personal effort and introspection. They suggested multiple pathways: deep meditation, immersing oneself in meaningful music, spending contemplative time in nature, engaging in profound conversations with trusted friends, or reading inspiring works that resonate with one's soul. The key, they stressed, was that we must determine our own answers rather than expecting them to come from outside ourselves. They recommended seeking quiet spaces away from the constant bombardment of external noise, social media, others' expectations, and societal pressures. Most importantly, they taught me to pay attention to physical reactions like unexpected chills or tears of joy when encountering certain ideas or activities, as these visceral responses often serve as powerful clues pointing toward one's true purpose for existing. Mike asked about my destination, and I explained I was starting my vacation, seeking time to think. When I asked what made him put those questions on the menu, Mike shared his story. Years ago, while living a hectic life of graduate school, work, and athletic training, he took a trip to Costa Rica after graduation. Sitting on a beach watching a spectacular sunset, he had a profound realization that paradise had existed just hours away while he'd been scheduling every minute of his life. The timelessness of the waves and sunset made his problems seem insignificant, leading him to ask, "Why am I here?" Mike concluded, "Life is a great story. It's just that some people don't realize they are the author, and they can write it however they want." Before I left, he gave me directions back to the highway. Looking at the menu one last time, I reflected on how deeply the questions had affected me. Just a day earlier, I would have thought someone asking such questions was strange, but now I couldn't imagine not having encountered them. Casey brought my check, along with the last piece of strawberry rhubarb pie as a parting gift from Mike, and she gave me a menu as her own gift. After my night in the cafe, my life changed profoundly, not through dramatic, lightning bolt moments, but through gradual shifts that ultimately transformed everything. I continued pondering, "Why am I here?" throughout my vacation, though finding my purpose for existing required more than just reflection. Using Casey and Anne's methods, I dedicated small amounts of time daily to activities I enjoyed and sought opportunities to try new things, gradually expanding my universe of possibilities. When my PFE finally became clear, I faced the greatest challenge, actually choosing to live that purpose rather than just continuing as before. Mike's philosophy that you can't fear not having the chance to do something if you are doing it or have already done it helped me push open that gate. Now I think of the cafe daily, remembering Casey's green sea turtle story when my mailbox fills with advertisements, saving my strength for the outgoing waves rather than battling the incoming ones. My only regret is not making these changes sooner, but I would never return to life on the other side of that gate.